All right. We had a few technical difficulties, but we're ready to go now. Thank you all for coming. I'm glad you survived last night's festivities, and you're here wide awake and ready to go. So this session is Configuring and Managing Your Access Services in SharePoint 2013. We're going to be focusing on on-premise. I'm Gary Devendorf, and we have...
I'm Lois Wong.
We're both on the Access Engineering team, so let's jump right into it. So our goals are is that we want to teach you IT pros what you need to know about access services. Seems to be one of the big mysteries. People go, access, I've heard of that. Access services, I haven't heard of that. So when you leave here, you'll know what access services and how it impacts your job and your organization. We want to talk about the virtues of Office 365. You'll see how access services and 365 play together very well. But we are going to focus a lot on how you can set up access services for on-premise deployment. A lot of people are on-premise. They want to use access services. That's the real focus of our job. And how to keep everything in control and secure and keep you calm, keep your beepers from going off late at night and that kind of thing. So we're going to back up a bit and talk about what is the problem we're solving here. Why do people want things like access services? We're going to go into detail about access services and again, what it is so you can describe it and use it and tell your organization, you know, where it fits in your planning. We're going to talk about the architecture overview. Lois is going to talk about architecture, then she's going to go into planning, and then your deployment, so the steps and things you need to know. So you know how big this task is, you know, for your organization for on-prem. And then we'll do a little cleanup conclusions about what we've learned. So right off the bat, and I always hate presentations that go right to the bits. So what is the problem we're trying to solve here? Why does access services exist? Kind of talks about why did access even exist back 20 years ago. By the way, its 20-year anniversary was last month. So the problem we're trying to solve, if you think about it, is that you have unknown and uncontrolled data and applications throughout your environment. Now, you might say, that's great. I don't care. If they have a 10,000-row Excel spreadsheet running some department in my organization, it's nothing off of me. I'm the IT guy. They can go off and do what they want. But then these older guys know that what happens eventually is they come to you with this broken 10,000-line Excel spreadsheet and say, it doesn't scale for what we're trying to do. We're getting some problems. Can you, IT guy, fix this? And you say, I didn't create it. I didn't plan it. I wasn't involved with it. It's not my problem. Then, of course, they go to top management and say, this is mission critical. Comes back to you and say, now it is your problem. So the point is, all unknown, uncontrolled data and applications eventually become your responsibility. So, and if someone else builds it, then it may be a bad application, maybe poorly designed, you know, just a poor architecture. And typically, you know, someone says, I want to do a really a new process for my business. I don't know how to do it. So if I don't have the tools to do it, I'm going to do it in whatever way tools I do have. You know, so every problem looks like a nail if you're a hammer kind of thing. And you end up, of course, with lots of IT backlog. I need this, I need this, I need this, and you have 2 or 3 years of requests coming into IT. So these are the problems that drive you crazy because they build something that has no backup, and when it goes away, they come to you and say, my hard drive fried, fix it, you know, and you're sort of stuck. So, and then, of course, they try and expand it. They've been using this application by 3 people for 2 years, and now it needs to be used by 30 people. And again, they come to you as an IT pro and say, make my life better, make my applications better. And you're like, well, you didn't start on a good foundation necessarily. And an upgrade path. I need to grow it up. So how do I do it? So those are the problems that we're going to solve with access services. So where is your data? Now, think a little outside the box. Your data can be on yellow stickies stuck on someone's wall, a very popular small cache kind of way of storing data. We've had businesses that run their entire CRM system in documents they print out. You know, here's my contact list. It's just in a Word document. Again, Excel spreadsheets may be the most popular data store on the planet. There's lots and lots of people using Excel for things that it's for and things it's not for. Relational databases. You guys have Oracle, you have DB2, you have different kinds of stores all over the place. Those typically are well controlled, well funded. You know, you have a data center and so on. Mainframe data, maybe some data you're pulling from the cloud. You know, there's lots of different kinds of data. Some of the problems may be data on laptops. We hear in the news every now and then that some big government agency lost everyone's social security number because a laptop got left at an airport with all the information on there. You know, things like thumb drives. So putting data on there is not controlled. It's not under your purview. People put servers in their office, run it to run their business, don't let you guys know about it. You know, people take pictures of whiteboards. The point is there's just lots and lots of data out there, and you want to try and control as much as possible so you don't end up being the guy that's in trouble for something you didn't even do. Hey, how did that data leave here? You know, oh, somebody wrote their own application, put all this data in it, and then, you know, broke it. So why does access, where does access fit into the story? Well, when you have a big database system or a mainframe system, lots of dollars, lots of process, structure, people, servers, that's great. However, it's expensive and can be difficult to work with. So typically it takes a long time to build those applications, and you have lots of them and people manage those, but if someone needs a smaller need, I just need to keep track of my widgets. I don't need this big thing. So what do you do for those people? Do you ignore them and let them go off on their own devices, or do you enable them with tools? Now, access has always been really good for dealing with those sort of lower-end databases or small data as opposed to big data. And if you look at it here, access fits between the simple and the really structured, and think of structured as like in things like, you know, Oracle and DB2 and so on. So it has the advantages of low-end systems, like an Excel spreadsheet. I don't have to have a lot of skills. I can put my data in there. I don't have to worry about a lot of the problems you have. I get the advantages of a real relational database. You know, I have one version of the truth. Everyone goes into that one place, and I have, you know, referential integrity, and I have forms and validation and those kind of things that normally I get with a bigger system. So we kind of fit in that middle sweet spot. So we have to make a big differentiation here. It confuses everyone. The desktop access database application, which everyone knows and loves for 20 years, versus access services. Now, access services, which we'll talk about in quite a bit of detail here, is a whole different animal, but you're using the same client to create them. So I have part of Office, I have Access, and Access 2013, I say I'm going to create a new database, and the choice is I can create a desktop database, or I can create a web database. Or there's many, many other templates. But think of those two different categories. If I'm creating a classic Access desktop application, I go into my client, I build it, and I run it from the client. And that's where I get this rich environment. But when Access Services, I build it, I deploy it to SharePoint, and I'm running it on the web. So when you think of Access Services, think of SharePoint applications built by the Access client or tool, development tool. So we'll take a quick demo, and hopefully we remember which button to push. Three. Okay, so this is the 2013 Access client, and I'm going to open up the Northwind database. Now, for those people who don't know, Northwind is our hello world. Access has always come with a sample database with all kinds of features. And I'm just firing up. I'm in 2013 client that you can buy, download. You can't buy yet. You can download today and use. And notice when I start it, the first thing it says is, hey, I want you to log in. Well, this really means this desktop application has its own complete sort of security identity management system built into it. Well, what a pain in the neck. Someone gets hired at the company, I have to go and add them to an access table so they have access to that. So that's one of the sort of like, gee, what about scale and control kind of things. So I'm going to, you know, pick somebody, log in, and just poke around. I got a nice form. Look, there's some charts here. I can click on some order details. I get a nice form. I can step through the data, different kind of things. So this is just your desktop application that you all know and love, or at least your end users know and love. IT people know and don't love, I should say, because the problems come to them. So just wanted to make clear, this is fine. This is still totally appropriate for a lot of people and a lot of uses. It's not dead. So when we say access services is great, people go, oh, access is dead. It's not. So that's sort of the whole point of this demo. So can we jump back to the slides? Is that one? So the desktop aside, it's there, it still has some love, still going forward. Now let's talk about the website. That's the new part. That's sort of why you're here, the thing that's new. First off, there's a new application development experience. Now, notice the little gears here that you have a SQL database in the back end. And this is where it kind of you admin types have to know about. The application itself is in SharePoint, running a web application. So it's a web application running in SharePoint that you're going to create with Access Services. And you're going to create it with the Access client. And in the case of 365, that SQL backend is Azure. In the case of on-premise, then you have to set up something we'll talk about. So this is an example of what the web application looks like. Notice along the left-hand side, I have my tables. And across the top, I have views. So I can view, say, view by category. The data sheet view is a grid kind of view. I can do searches here of my elements. I want to see just ones that start with C, or as I'm typing, it's actually filtering down. And then I can see details. I can also have related items and some other things. The thing to keep in mind is this was built by the tool. There's a default UI generated for you. You can go around and play around, move some fields around and stuff, but the point is this gets all generated for you. So let's see what it looks like live. Okay, so here's an application that we created, just a little demo application. And things I want to point out are that here's my table. So if I go to loans, and this is for loaning out equipment. Someone's checking out a piece of a projector for a meeting or something, and I can know who has it and what date and so on. So notice here I can filter. So if I come up here and I type on so I just see the surfaces. If I go to items, so these are the things we have. Notice down here, related items, here's the things that have been loaned. This has been loaned to these people on these dates. There is no code here, and there's not even a design here other than, well, Lois is going to do a demo to show how this was created. So, and I have contacts, but I want to point out one thing. This table is sort of a special table in that it's running slow, might be the special part about it. There. This table, which we can join with the other data and work with, is actually a SharePoint list. All of the other data is in SQL, native SQL. So, but this one's a read-only connection to a SharePoint list. So I could keep people's names or their phone numbers or something in SharePoint where they live, and I could just reference them down inside my application. Again, no code, not jumping through any special hoops. You know, I'm not dealing with an extra login or anything like that. So, should we jump back? So, the new app model, which you're going to see in a second, has something called predefined templates, table templates. At Microsoft, we call them nouns. I think because we like Schoolhouse Rock. But these predefined nouns define your tables, not just one table, but you can have multiple tables, and you'll see that. We automatically generate the UI with navigation forms and buttons for you. So I know as a developer, you spend way too much time on the UI, you know, making it just right and so on. I never do that with Excel. I go, here's your Excel template, take it, and they can figure it out and, you know, use it. But other applications, you have to define the UI, it's a real problem. And the fact that there's no code, I mean, there's some macro expressions, but there's no code. No one's writing VBA. No one's writing JavaScript. It's being generated for you. And the result is a pretty professionally looking application. So for deployment of my application, my Access web app is a SharePoint app. That's the part that people don't quite get. It is an Access app. When I create it for the web, I can take that application and put it in the app catalog. I can put it in the marketplace, I think they call now the store. I can sell it. So people can deploy it to their sites by just going up to add to my site and see all the different applications, and one of them can be your Access application that you created at your organization. That makes deployment a whole lot easier than going to each desktop and deploying Access. It's a web application, works cross-browser, just like SharePoint. Now I have multi-user capabilities. People are connecting in and from many different browsers at the same time and accessing the data. So Active Directory permissions. I don't have to log in now or keep track of that because my application is a SharePoint application. It knows who you are from your login. I don't have to go off and keep your name and your phone number. Your name comes into current user. Sexy expression will tell me who you are. So installing is easy, deployment is easy, and you can do this on-premise, which is sort of our focus here. Now the back end is SQL, so that data that was inside my tables that I enter ends up in SQL. The end user has no idea that it's SQL, and he doesn't care. Matter of fact, the developer has no idea or doesn't care either. He's just saying, here's my tables, I need a first name, a middle name, a last name, a phone number. Under the covers, hidden from the developing people, a lot is going on. And so on-premise people, you're going to have to deal with some of that. So I can use my sort of existing skills against that SQL data. So the tables that are created here aren't obfuscated like SharePoint. So if I have a table of names, or a table of phone numbers, I can access that through SQL. And it'll look like it does in Access. The fields will be named the same, the tables will be named the same, and I can go in there and connect to it and write SQL queries against it because it's just SQL. People ask for that a lot in SharePoint. Said, yeah, I just want to get to this list not through SharePoint, but through another way. We always said, no, you can't do that. So it kind of gets around that. And that gives you an upgrade path. If suddenly your 10,000 record database turns into a 10 million one, and I want to re-host this or access it through SQL or write a new front end on it, I can do that. So, as you might remember, in 2010, you could create your tables and become SharePoint lists. Now, again, full sequence. So, building an app, if we can switch over to yours.
Yeah, so Gary just showed you the loan app in the browser, how it looks like, and it's nice UI, and it's pretty smooth navigation and everything. And I will just be here and spend 1 minute with you guys and see how we create that app. So I'm in the Access client, and I start and create a new application. Let's call it SPC 2012. And put in my SharePoint URL, my tenant URL, and then click Create. So what's happening here is that Access is actually, the Access client is actually contacting Office 365, that's what I'm using here, and created a web application on Office 365. At the same time, Office 365 figured out you're creating a SharePoint app, and you request a database, so it provisioned a database in SQL Azure for you. Then, once that's done, you can actually use any browser to connect to that application. That's the runtime of the application. Okay, let's see. So here, we have already provisioned the application while we were talking. Let's say we want to check the devices, the loan devices. So it asked me what I want to track. So I type in loan, and it says, okay, item loans. I create that. Access has a few pre-populated templates. Those are on office.com. They are being updated based on user feedback and user publishing. So here, they've already stuck in all the tables that's related to this topic for me in my application. Let's see how it looks. Come here and launch the app. And sign in. Here, you're already connected to this app we created within 1 minute. This looks exactly the same as Gary showed you. It has full function of tracking devices on loan, and you literally only spend 60 seconds of creating it.
Great. So you could see how an end user could probably figure this out. I go in and I search in my nouns. Now, what may not be apparent is when Lois typed in loan and it said, here's the ones that are related, the templates. Back at Microsoft, we know what you typed. So people are looking for stuff that we don't have. It's a service, those nouns. We can add to it. So as we see people looking for the same thing over and over again, we can create templates for you. So that's a growing, continuing list of nouns. I believe the number last I heard was like 150 that are out there. So again, someone wants to keep track of, you know, pencils or parking spaces or something, hopefully we'll predefine those for you. So you can think of the advantages right off the bat. You know, I got centralized data. My data lives in one place, one version of the truth. I got the administration of SharePoint for me. People log in, I have their identity, I can turn off their access to it, I can set their permission levels, and I got this, you know, the whole security of that. With the end user creating it, it's really hard to create a bad app if you can't write code. Now these apps are going to look the same or very similar, but so does a spreadsheet. Typically, when I give you a spreadsheet, you can figure it out in a hurry. So we made it professional, what we think it is. Now, you can move things around in the design experience, so I recommend going up to the hands-on lab and playing around, or doing it yourself, just fire up one and pick a noun, because you can move things around. So also, because it's an application, a SharePoint app that you add to your environment, there's all that monitoring and tracking. Who's deployed this to their site? I can look that up as an administrator. I can find out that, gee, there's a bug with one of these, and I can just update it and roll it out to people. And because it's in the App Store, I could make some money. You know, if I want to create a business-specific application that people would want to use, and I can do that with no code. So it's pretty exciting that people can create these applications. So now we'll talk about the guts. This is why you guys came here, to find out how all the pieces work and how we can get at them.
Okay. So I want you to look at this slide, and there are three big chunks here. One is your access client, that's a red piece. And then there is Office 365, that's your SharePoint. And that on the right-hand side, that's the SQL databases. So we showed you in the demo, when a user file open access and create a new application, it will create a SharePoint application on SharePoint. And at the same time, we will provision a database for in SQL Azure for that web application. Anything that's related to this application stays in that database. You can package it up, and you can transport the data later to some other environment, because all of the data lives in that SQL server, lives in that database. And we're here to talk about, what if you cannot use Office 365? What does it do for on-prem? So it is literally the same architecture for the cloud and for the on-prem. You replace Office 365 with your SharePoint on-premise deployment and replace SQL Azure with a SQL Server instance, then everything stays the same. You use the Access client to create and modify the application. While you give it to users to use, you just need to ask them to connect to a particular URL of this SharePoint application through their browser.
All right, so you could tell that as a person who wanted to use Access Services, if I had 365, I had licensing to that, everything's for free for me. I just go in and I can create my databases, create my applications. I don't worry about anything. My data is living in SQL Azure, totally hidden from me. I don't really care, except if I want to connect to it directly. I can connect to it directly, do calls to that SQL, do things to that data. It's exposed. So I get the security, the identity, and the access control. I get the backup and restore, all those stuff that you get as a service. So that's like great. But what if you can't use 365? I was working in the booth and I had lots of people about, oh, you're using 365? And they're like, well, we have reasons. And I've heard a lot of them. So sometimes legal reasons, right? This data must be here inside my data center. It must be governance. You know, the government says this, or our policy is that. Our customers' data cannot leave this building or cannot leave their building for whatever reason. Network. I'm in a part of the world where the network is semi-non-existent. So I need to have my own island of technology that I take care of. Cost. I have a great data center. It's been cheaply running. We're doing a great job of that. We want to keep doing that, or for other reasons. So how many people here are on-prem, 99% on-prem?
A lot of you.
It looks like about 95% of you people here. So, yeah, thanks. So the good news, is that you can set up this environment to work in your on-prem environment, which is why we had this session. You know, I said we have to have this session so people know that they can do this and not dismiss Access Services because they're not running Azure. So if you currently have a SharePoint on-prem environment. Let's see that. How many people are running SharePoint on-prem? Should be the same people because you're at a SharePoint conference. All right. Yep. That's good. So now we're going to talk about sort of what you need to do to get to fully functionality.
Yes. So when you go ahead and think about and you need to enable a new service for on-premise, I'm sure you all have some planning to do. I would guess it includes cost, security concerns, and manageability concerns. So let's address those one by one from the access service point of view. First of all, the cost. You need a SQL Server 2012 license in order to use access service. So on this, in this graph on the left-hand side, the green box is your SharePoint 2013 deployment. SharePoint requires, the minimum SQL Server requirement is SQL Server 2008 R2 SP1 or 2012. But because Access Service uses new feature in SQL Server 2012, for example, contained database and full-text search, you saw that in our demo, full-text search give you the first-class experience of search on our home pages for Access Service apps. So that's why we require SQL Server 2012 for Access Service. And even if you use SQL Server 2012 for SharePoint databases as well, we recommend you have a separate instance of SQL Server 2012 for access applications. The reason is about our security model. We'll dive into that in the next slide. But just to recap here, to use Access Service, you do have a software requirement for having SQL Server 2012. Security model. You need to have SQL, we need you to turn on the mixed mode authentication for that SQL Server instance that hosts Access Services. The reason is that in this graph, you saw there are two types of authentications. The topmost login is an NT-auth login. This one is used to create every single database for your application. So when someone came in and asked to create the loan application, this NT-auth login is used to create a correspondent database for that application. There is always a one-to-one mapping between the application and the database. And then for the application itself to connect to its backend database, we actually create a SQL login for the application to connect to the database. So every user who has permission to use application one will come in and share this login to the backend database. That one is a SQL login. You don't have to create it. When Access Service provisions the database for you, we provision that login for you as well. So I understand generally there is the idea that SQL authentication is less secure because you hand out a connection string with username and password out. But in this case, we don't actually expose this login. The login is only available for Access Service to connect to the backend database. It's totally transparent to the user. So how does that work? When somebody come in and create application four, we authenticate this user based on their SharePoint identity. If the user has permission to create apps, we use this NT-auth account to create a database. And then we also provision a new login for the app to connect to the database. Then for everyone who is trying to connect to the app, again, we identify the users based on their SharePoint login. Someone came in and we check whether they have read, contributor, or full control permission on the application. The authentication is done on the SharePoint front-end level. Once we establish that the user do have permission to connect to the app, then we ask Access Service to impersonate one of the roles, either read or contribute or full control, use the SQL login that we create for the application to connect to the corresponding database. So you might ask, why can't we have the user's login to connect to the database directly? Sadly, that's because SQL does not support claims authentication yet. That's why we have to create a SQL login in between the app and the database. And do the user authentication on the SharePoint level. Next, manageability. So I talked about that. Access creates one database per application. There is a one-to-one mapping between app and a database. So it sounds like there's going to be a lot of databases. Is that going to be a problem to manage them? Actually, for each application and each database we create, we do not impose any DBA task on you, because we provision a database and we create logins to connect you to the database. Access manage that aspect for you.
I think when we say we're saying Access Services, the service that you turn on in SharePoint to handle all that for you.
Right. And then how about data backup? So Access Service does not backup the data for you. But this on the right-hand side you saw, that's a standard SQL Server. SQL Server offers a lot of tools to backup databases and the server as a whole. So if you do think that the applications are mission critical, you can use the tools provided by SQL Server to backup the database. All right? So we now understand the manageability and the security and the cost aspect. So how much work are we looking at to actually set up Access Service on-prem? So there are three big chunks of the work. One is to install and configure SQL Server. Next is install Access Service's pre-required MSIs and enable Access Service on SharePoint. Let's go to the first one. Install and configure SQL Server 2012. When you are installing SQL Server 2012, you will be asked, which security mode do you need? So you need to pick the mixed mode of security, and the Access Service, service account used for Access Service need to have the server roles, need to have the following, the listed roles on this picture. It's DB creator and security admin. Next, during the install of the SQL Server, we ask you to turn on full text search. That is for the search experience, the built-in search experience in Access application. And after install, we ask you to turn on contained database. This is to help us to ensure each database is isolated from each other, to make it more secure. So one SQL login can only get to one database. None of the logins are shared across multiple app databases. This also helps in a scenario that if you have users who want different collation in their applications, usually the collation is set on SQL Server level, so all the applications will share the same collation. But by turn on contained database, each application can have their different collation. And the user might opt into certain sort order than others, and that will enable that scenario. Next, during the configuration, to turn on the allow triggers to file others property. This is for the data macro in Access Service. You know, in Access Service, when you have, you can actually create a table and say, after the table has been updated, you can trigger a verification on another table, things like that. That kind of logic is enabled by turning on this trigger. Next, let's look at a set of MSIs you need to install for Access Service. These five MSIs need to go on the SharePoint boxes. The top three are needed not just for Access Service applications, they're needed for all SharePoint applications. The SharePoint application uses the SQL DACPack technology for packaging data layer. The top three SQL MSIs are needed for that scenario. The next two are needed for the Access application to connect to SharePoint lists. LocalDB and the SQL Server native client are needed for us to build queries on top of local Access application tables and SharePoint lists that we bring in into the application. Gary showed you in his demo that you can actually he showed that linking to a calendar from SharePoint into his Access loan application. So you can actually see what device is going to which event on what day by build a query on top of both a local table as well as the SharePoint list you linked into the app. So these MSIs need to go on the SharePoint box, not the SQL servers. Also, for the scenario to connect to SharePoint list, we need you to turn on the IIS application pool, load user profile. This setting is creating a isolation between service accounts, so it's more secure. And also, it creates a writable app data folder, which is needed for us to build queries and data sets for the linked SharePoint lists. Last task is to enable access service on SharePoint. Like any SharePoint services, you need to go to the admin page to turn it on, or you can use the PowerShell we shipped in the disk to turn it on. During that step, we will be asking you which SQL server you configured for access service to use to host all the access application. So all the steps I talked about here, there are 6 or 7 of them, they are available on this white paper we shipped in on Microsoft.com, and you can find it there and follow the steps to set up access service for on-prem.
All right, so what do you get for all your efforts? First, let's switch over to my machine, which is 3. So here was the application that Lois used the named template when she built the loan thing. And then we added before the calendar of events into there. So I want to take a look at some of the data. If you look at the folding table, it shows that here it was loaned out, return date, condition was good, and the due date. Because this is in SQL Azure, or in your case, it would be in your SQL Server, I can actually go into the database directly. So here I am with a SQL client, and I go into my loans, and I have a query run here, and I actually can see here is the data here. So it's just SQL, nothing obfuscated at all for you. But some advantages is I could do things like pull the same data into an Excel spreadsheet after all my bad mouthing of Excel spreadsheets. But the people could actually pull that data in, do the reporting, charts and graphs on data that's living from Access, which is pretty useful because some of the reporting features and Access services are still evolving, but you have lots of options to take that data and do what you want with it. So it's pretty exciting that the data is in a place that the organization and the enterprise can trust and be happy with, but it still can be used by lots of applications. So we'll switch back to 1. So maybe the biggest thing is self-service for your information workers. Stop bugging me. Don't call me up and say I need this or I need that. You say, hey, you can create your own application. Here's Access. I'll give you access to Access. And you can turn off on and off who can use it, who can be the developer. And with a few trained people, they can really create lots of simple apps. I mean, lots of different apps to satisfy their need and stop, again, bugging you. Whether they're bugging you for a new app or bugging you because the one they built is really bad and broken. So the idea is that they get off your back. You get a nice design experience. So, I hate to say this, but even admins can go build their own apps, do what they want, with a UI that looks, pretty reasonable for the end users. You could create your, help ticket application yourself. Notice here in this screenshot, we didn't show you before, is that here's an event. So after update, so I just go over to one of the fields and I can click on after update and I can do things like check to make sure the value's less than 100 or that if you have this value, that value must also be set and so on. I can create my expressions there. So I have this intuitive design experience that's meant for IWs. I tell people that if you can create a spreadsheet and a formula in the spreadsheet, you're the perfect person. You can go in here and you can create this application. So easy to manage. because after I create this, I publish it up to the app catalog for my local organization, or I can submit it to Microsoft to go up into the marketplace where people can actually pay for it. There is already, if you go to the marketplace, there's already several Access created applications that we have put up there. And some of them say Access logos on them and some don't. So they're there, and you really can't tell the difference unless we put the Access logo on them. So they're full on, all the functionality, things like I can see how many people have deployed this application. If I want to license it, I can say 50 people can use this, and every time someone installs it, it deprecates that, and I can do the full telemetry on what's happening with my application. And the data is stored in SQL, hidden from the developer, you know, hidden from, I guess, everyone except from the admins. So what about my earlier versions of Access? The guy who bugged me last week about the Access database that's broken. You know, he says, come and fix it. And you say, I don't know about Access. I'm not touching VBA. So you have a couple options. Well, one, what I show here at the bottom is, this is the, at the bottom of the create table screen, I can say create a table, and I could use the nouns. I could type in things to search for, or I could select, I want to create from an other Access database. So the little Access logo there. If they click on that, they can point to their existing Access database, and it'll bring in all the tables. And it'll bring in the relationships, as long as they have primary keys. And then, but that's all it does. And you might say, well, that kind of sucks if it'll just bring in the data. But remember, it's generating that UI for you. It's generating the UI, complete with lookups, relationship-related items, and filtering, and views, and so on. All gets created automatically just by defining the tables. So it brings them in and brings in the data, and now they have a web application. And most code written in Access is usually navigation. How do I get from here? How do I get from there? What do I do when they click here? Now you can edit that then in the web to add your events and validations and things like that. But the point is, if you have troublesome Access databases in your environment, people come to you, this is definitely a nice option. And there's a session called Taming the Beast happening today, later today, that talks about what to do with your environment, because you don't know those Access databases even exist. And you don't want to, you know, go back and say, here's these three Access databases, I'll fix those, and find out there's 1,000 other ones. So the session later today will talk about what you can do, crawl your environment, and find those things out. Also, I can start from an Excel spreadsheet. A guy comes to you with that 10,000 line Excel spreadsheet that's, they're putting data in the wrong places, they can't navigate around, they can't find things. Let's bring that in. There's a session tomorrow that talks about these migration options. And for example, we have a wizard that will break your table up, your Excel spreadsheet up into tables, try and do some normality for you, which we're going to show tomorrow. And there's lots of other sources. You can bring in data as, you know, common delimited files, or, you know, again, spreadsheets. We're going to do a demo of Lotus Notes just for those old people in the audience, like myself. So I can bring in a SharePoint list. I want to upgrade a list to make it relational with, you know, lookups, child-parent relationships, and so on. I could do that. So the Access client that we showed right off the bat, I have a desktop client that I need to deploy to everyone who's going to use it. I get rich functionality. Hey, I got this, you know, I'm not waiting for the network for anything. Everything just works for me. I get VBA code, which is a blessing and a curse, right? I can do anything, and the problem is I can do anything, and I do. I always like to say that when you make an application idiot-proof, they always make a better idiot. So, you have an ecosystem of developers. I mean, I'm sorry, there's a lot of people out there that have been creating Access apps for years and years and years. They know everything. You can do a Bing search on something in Access and find out how to do it. So that's a really nice ecosystem. It's still going forward in 2013. I can take that old application, run it in 2013, that old database, load it up, keep going the way I'm going. But if I go over to a web SharePoint application, I get the advantage of the web, meaning, again, multi-user, multi-browser. You know, so whatever platform they're on, I don't worry about it. I don't have to deploy anything to them. I send them a URL, turn on their permission, you know, in my environment. So sharing, oh, do you want to know about the data? Here's a URL. Go there and poke around it yourself. Again, no code. You can't write bad code if you can't write code. And it's the latest technology. Under the covers is JavaScript, HTML, you know, rendered on those pages. And He gets a new functionality, you know, where it's a SharePoint application. I can connect to these SharePoint lists. And a lot of times you tell the developer, I want you to create an Access database. They'll say, go away. I'm not going to do that. That's beneath me. You say, I want you to create a SharePoint application using JavaScript and HTML. And you know, they go, this is great. And then they find out they don't have to do any of that, but they've still created that application. So it's the new, cool, you know, leading edge kind of thing to do. So our conclusions are that most environments have out-of-control data somewhere. And the worst problem is if you don't know you have it. Although everyone is like, yeah, they have that spreadsheet over in finance and they have this and over there. It's kind of going to become your problem sooner or later. Someone's going to say, hey, that data was lost, or someone copied the wrong column, and now IT, I want you to make sure that never happens again. So one of your options is, I want to get that out-of-control data into where it's more controlled. I want a simple container. I don't have to send people to training for 6 months. I want a simple container where they can put that data, but it's got to be robust. It's got to scale. It's got to be, again, stored in SQL using the latest technology in browsers. It's going to be managed, you know, who can access it, who can run it. And I'm really getting control of data at the edges. I hit the edges, it means data that's on someone's hard drive somewhere that I don't know about. This is a chance to get them in there. Because if people start using SharePoint and they're putting their documents there, they'll be thinking, I want my data there. And in the past, they might say, I want a list with 10,000 items in it to keep track of my widgets. And you might say, well, you know, a better solution for that might be Access Services. If you have Office 365, you have everything you need, away you go. If you have an on-prem environment, you have the white paper, you know, what Lois talked about, how to set up your environment so your end users don't know the difference, you know, whether hitting, you know, 365 or hitting your environment. And you're essentially safely empowering those end users so they're not building problems for you later on. So you can go today, you can go up to office.com/preview, and this is what our demos are on, by the way. At the whole conference, we just went up and created a tenant. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. We do mention that for Access Services, you want to use the Small Business Premium or Office 365 Enterprise. We created a tenant, gives us 25 users. Our team has like a dozen or so people in that tenant, and we're doing all our demos in that one tenant, which makes us wonder about the network. We're like, oh, come on, network. These are the other sessions by the Access team. And by the way, if you see these shirts, we're all wearing these shirts, broke our budget. Stop those guys and say, hey, I have a question about Access, because these guys, you know, are the ones, you know, we know about Access and we can answer your questions, and we're going to be wearing them all week. So if we're going to go through that, you should take advantage of it. And there's some related sessions here that aren't given by our team, but things around your SharePoint applications, you know, creating, deploying, those kind of things. Which brings me to some resources. So you guys, I know, get these slides later on. Our blog is really good. If you go to our blog, we have videos. We have this design criteria. We want to put 2-minute videos out there that explain something about the product you can watch. And make sure you fill your evaluations. And what I wanted to do is, before we go to the questions, I wanted to thank Lois, who has never presented at the SharePoint conference before, and thank you guys for coming. All right, we have almost 20 minutes for questions. So please use the mics only because we can't hear. This room is giant. So yes, go ahead.
Hi, nice presentation. Thank you. So I have some questions. So let me see. I'll start with what is, so is accessing data directly on SQL supported? So I know you said you can. Does that mean you should?
Or you can not? If you're an adult.
Okay, so adults can do it. And then App Store limits, if you develop it on Office 365 and Azure and you try to sell it, does that mean people that only use Office 365 and Azure can install it?
So the way you publish an application to the marketplace is that you can create the application using whatever environment. You can use your Office 365 tenant, or you can use your on-premise deployment with a SQL Server. Then before you publish that to the marketplace, you actually package it to the SharePoint app model. You literally go to Access Client as a save as, and we'll create a SharePoint app package for you. Then you upload that package to the marketplace. That's how you sell it.
Right, so it's a .app file that you're going to generate, and you can do whatever you want with it. It doesn't matter how it was created. So the answer is it can be on-prem or in the cloud. It doesn't matter. It can run both environments afterwards.
So for the user who actually purchased that app or downloaded from the corporate catalog for on-premise, they are using their own resource, their own setup of access service in order to use this app. They're not using your SQL Azure or your Office 365 tenancy. They are using it in their own.
How does it play with SharePoint branding and workflows and things like that?
Go ahead.
I say themes and security are inherited. So whatever your theme is for your site, and like any other SharePoint app, it'll be blue with red or whatever it is. So that's really good. For workflows, there is no connection.
Okay.
We're working on some things, but there's some tricks we could probably use. You could probably think of yourself, but right now there's no like turn on workflow or connect.
How about navigation? So in 2010, the navigation was different. You just had the navigate up folder.
When you say navigate,
well, you're on your access services application, and you're in the context of a larger intranet.
And you want to click on something and have it go?
I want it to be inherit navigation from the rest of my intranet.
Don't quite follow the question. Can you repeat that?
Okay, I click on a link on my intranet that says asset management. And so now I'm on an access services application.
Right.
Does it have the same top link bar as the rest of my intranet?
It does not, but you can just embed a whole URL to the page you want to go to.
Okay, I want to inherit a navigational thing, so it sounds like you're saying you don't inherit navigation.
Not inside the app itself, okay. But we also have the breadcrumb from the SharePoint on the top Chrome the SharePoint page. We still have that.
Okay, good. And are you encouraging people to strategically develop access apps? Because access was pretty cool in 2010, and then I haven't really heard much of a buzz. Like, I haven't heard anybody posting anything saying, I built this in Access 2010 services, and it's really helped my business. So I haven't seen like a lot in the blogosphere or out there in the community. So do you see that changing with Access Services 2013, where people are going to say, we really encourage our small to medium-sized applications to be developed in Access as a strategic approach?
Right, we're betting on SQL.
Okay.
We're saying we'd like our data to be SQL. It gives us so many features where we're limited a bit by SharePoint lists.
Right. So I think if you look at the amount of attention or during the developer overview session that Access has been demoed, and the better alignment for Access and SharePoint is definitely the way we go, and we think that will definitely help promote Access service getting more popular than before.
If anybody in the room sees me walking around and you have a success story about Access 2010 deployment, I'd love to hear it, so thanks.
Let's switch over. We'll go back and forth, so we'll go over to the mic on this side.
Thank you. Two quick questions. When you say security is inherited, are you saying that it's inherited from the parent site? And I take that to mean that within the Access application, different from 2010, there's no control over security. The members, visitors, and owners groups essentially are inherited.
No, it's inherited by default, but you can go to the page. It's no different than any other SharePoint app and change the permission setting.
Okay, so yeah. I do have control over...
You have totally control. It's the same as a SharePoint web, a SharePoint site collection. You can change the permission to whoever you grant permission to this app.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and one other question. Assuming that you're using Office 365, in terms of connecting directly with SQL Server, I can't do that, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm in the cloud. Is that correct?
So if you're using Office 365, you cannot connect directly to SQL Azure unless you open it up from the Access client. In the Access client 2013, it does have the feature say, we will give you a connection to do reporting. And it's an ODBC connection directly to the backend database.
Right. So
it's in the backstage of the client. You go back there and say, I want to expose this data so that I can access it.
But that is the different login than what Access Service uses to connect to the database.
So really where I'm going is if I have the reporting tool of my choice, can I connect to that backend database?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last question. And I understand if you can't answer it. Can you give us... some idea of what you're working on now, what the enhancements are going to be downstream? Workflows, that sort of thing?
We would be killed if we did.
All right. But, Thank you.
We'll just say really, really good stuff. Let's go back to this mic.
So we've actually already deployed some access in 2010. What's the upgrade or migration path since you've changed your architecture a little bit?
As I mentioned, I could just point to that access database and import it into a new web application, and it would bring in all the data and all the connection, all the relationships, and generate the UI again. So that's the upgrade path.
Have the client basically download it again, connect to it, and then re-upload it to the new application? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, we missed the first part of that.
Basically, have the customer who created this basically open it up in Access again, and then upload it to the new location.
He would create a new blank database on the web application Access Services, and then he'd say instead of create tables, I'd say import from the old Access database. Yes.
Okay, so we're doing the upgrade through the client, not through the actual upgrade of SharePoint.
We're taking data down and pushing it back up.
Correct. Yes. Now the old stuff still works. You know, Access Services 2010 and 2013 can run at the same time. So you could just leave them there if you wanted to.
Well, except I need a 2012 database to use all the new features, so it's...
Yeah,
I don't want to have it lingering
too long. You can go
through
the client, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Now back to this side.
Thanks. There were some learning pains when we moved from client access to Access 2010 services, and they didn't surface until we ran the web compatibility wizard. An example would be a user's form would have a drop-down box which was filtered, or it had a source query that used multiple tables and found that web compatibility wizard said, no, you can't be doing that. It has to be unfiltered one-table source for your user form control. I'm hoping you can tell us that there's been some improvement in that area in 2013, that the things we're used to doing in client access, the old days, will someday be done again in Access 2013.
Well, there's a very long list of things that worked in the rich client that don't work on the web.
Right.
And our goal is to fix a lot of that, but it doesn't mean duplicating it. Again, you're not going to see VBA. You know, we don't want people writing bad applications. But things like we're doing the navigation for you, that solves a lot of those problems. So we're trying to target our developer a little bit towards the end user more than the guy who is the hardcore access guy. I mean, you still have the old access stuff on the client, but if you want to take it in advantage of the web, then it is a subset. Now, think of it this way, though. I can still have my rich client doing everything it does and a web client working on the same data at the same time.
Well, and our clients don't typically want to go to two different environments to use their solution. They want the web-only tool, but I have yet to meet a client who didn't want to be able to trim the contents of a drop-down box by putting a filter in there or something like that.
Right. Right. Those are the kind of things that we're definitely looking at. Again, we have a very long list of which ones can do. Now, the good part is our release cycle is not 3 years anymore, and that we can do things much, quarterly and so on. So we are attacking those things.
Well, similar to that is, I don't think I've ever worked on an Access application that didn't ultimately want to talk to another Access application. So will we be able to connect our Access Services 2013 Access application to another Access 2013 Access application and see the tables in the other Access app and so on?
We're totally aware of that scenario, and we're trying to fix that because you can't right now.
Okay, and the last question I have is, you're silent on the topic of SQL reporting services. So what is Microsoft's in-house tool for Access Services reporting, where you don't have to compel the user to download something to their local desktop and run it locally?
So you can use multiple tools to do reporting. Basically, any tool that can use ODBC connection, you can use that. Access client itself can have ODBC connection to a backend SQL server, or does Excel, you can have a ODBC connection to the Access app database in SQL server, any other tools you want.
I'm only looking for the web reporting tools.
So today, in Access 2013, the reporting story is pretty much offline. You have a client reporting tool to connect to the backend database. For the web experience in the browser, we do provide summary view kind of forms which serve particular reporting needs, but I understand that if you want rich charting and reporting experience, you need a tool like Excel or any other tools that use ODBC.
Thank you.
Great. Back over to the our right, your left.
Reports of the demise of InfoPath as a result of this product, is that true? And if it is, what are you doing to make up for it?
Well, as I was showing, the Access client and the old Access stuff still works in 2013. So again, we announce something new and people immediately think the old part, you know, the classic part is dead. It's not. It's still there. It's used by lots and lots of people around the world. There's still a lot of demand for it. So it's not dead. I don't know how to say, you know, more.
But I mean, are we looking towards this product to sort of become the forms piece of SharePoint in the future?
If it does that, it's an addition to what it already does.
Yes.
The old stuff. So it's not, we're not taking away, we're adding.
So InfoPath is not going away then, that's what you're saying.
We can ask the InfoPath guys, but I have no idea.
Okay. So and where are they is the question.
Yeah. So go back over to this slide.
Are fine-grained permissions supported, say table or record level?
No, so the permission level in this release is supported on the application level. So it's the SharePoint application model. You either have read permission to the app or write or design, or you have none. So it's not fine-grained into a particular role in the app itself.
Or a particular table, right? Yeah. So we're aware of that. We know that's something that people definitely have a lot of scenarios they need.
And I have a second question. On a lot of my relational table solutions, I'm also using a document library, and I'm wondering if this will connect to SharePoint document libraries or if I'll need a different file solution.
Yes, so you saw that we, in the demo, showed you we connected to a SharePoint calendar list. You can connect to any SharePoint list type. Document library is definitely the top. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, back over this side.
All right, thank you. This may be just plus one-ing of an idea that I'm sure you're already aware of. The biggest hurdle to adoption that we've seen from our customers is that the vast majority of their Access databases are already linking to some external data source, SQL Server or some other OLDB data source, and those can't be turned into Access web applications. They could in 2010, obviously can't now. Is there anything you can speak to about what your plans are and that sort of thing?
Right, we refer to that internally as getting off the island, you know, being able to connect to all those external systems, which at the moment, the only connection we can do is to a SharePoint list, and that's read-only. We're totally aware of that problem. We have several creative ways we're thinking of fixing that, but yeah, we want to make that possible. We want to be able to connect to every data source that you can, because we want people to get the data they need in a simple format without having to jump through all kinds of hoops. So we feel your pain.
All right.
And back over to our left here.
Yes, hi. You mentioned, I mean, the last questionnaire just didn't define that you had item-level security, right? But is it in a plan that you could have item-level security in later versions of Access Online or Access Web? And
so are we going to do item-level security? We'd love to. We're looking at all our features and what we're doing. That's something that we hear daily, that people want to have item-level access control. It's not a small request, though.
I think it will be very interesting to, like, after this session, to learn about your scenario and help us to be better educated about what the scenario is and make the investment.
And there are some tricks. You can say, like, I only want to see my records when I put in the information. I want to see everyone else's on the table. There's ways of doing those things today, you know, that we can talk about. But, again, access level security, item level security, we hear that all the time.
And my second question is to, if you have the JavaScript backend, are those libraries available to extend or customize for developers, or they're just locked up?
No, the JavaScript libraries are ours, and we'll change them. So we suggest you don't poke around with them. I don't think you even have the ability to get to them.
All right. The last one, last piece is you have the database is isolated and is full text search on. Are those full text searches available on your top level SharePoint sites for search, or we have to write separate crawls for each one?
You're going to have to configure a separate crawl because the data is not living in SharePoint. It's living in your SQL database or SQL Azure, and you have to tell your search engine to also crawl those.
But thank you.
So let's go back over to the right.
First, thank you very much. It was a good session. From an IT pro perspective, database naming for creating each one of these, their isolated databases, didn't see how the database naming is happening. Is it a GUIDed thing, or does it pass the friendly name that we're passing in at the beginning? How does that get created on the back end?
So the database name is a GUID. So on the because we're trying to make it transparent to the end user. The end user pick a name for the application, and then Access Service will generate a database name and provision a database on the SQL Server.
Ouch. Second, is there a PowerShell command to be able to translate what the GUIDed database name is into something that's readable that tells us which database is for which Access application?
So in the Access client, if you're connected to the application, you will be able to see the server and the database name. But that tells you which database it is.
For the IT pro, is there something on the administration side that allows us to bulk be able to do a translation? Not from the end user. This is an IT pro type
right.
of question.
No, we don't support the rename of the database so far. Yeah.
Not rename, just list.
Just let them know.
Yes, you can find out the list of databases.
Thank you.
Yes.
Back over to this side.
Yes, I'm interested. What kind of documentation might exist for best practices on when to use Access services? We've run into some situations where end users have created monster Access databases that have become a support nightmare, and now we're kind of down deep in the trenches trying to determine, do we stay the path of sticking with Access services? You know, hundreds of users, hundreds of macros per database, and is that going to migrate cleanly to the next version? All these kind of questions are starting to come up in my mind as I see the session here.
I'll start. So by going to SQL backend, your scalability should get a lot better as opposed to lists. And Lois, do you want to add anything about?
We have some case study about companies that use Access service as a validation of how they use that. I think for your particular problem, we recommend you to go to the Taming the Beast session or talk about how IT can manage Access service and to be always in the know about how it has been used, who are the users creating those things. That might answer your question over there.
So I think it should be the last question on the mic, so we'll go to the right, and then you guys can come up and talk to us as we're picking up. So back here to the right.
Okay. Any requirements regarding the addition of SQL Server for an on-prem solution?
The requirement is really just a SQL Server 2012 instance. And there are a couple of things we said. When you configure it, you turn on full-text search, turn on mixed mode security, and a couple of other properties. The white paper is listed in the deck. And when you open that on Microsoft.com, you can see all the requirements in there.
So standard edition is OK?
Yes, that's true.
What about database size? Since the data is living in SQL Server, I guess it's pretty much unlimited.
So the database size depends on how the user use it, how much data they stick into it.
Yes, but how much is allowed for Azure?
There is no particular size if you're doing it on-prem. For cloud, for the Office 365 version, we configure the max size of the database as 1 gigabyte. But for on-prem, the IT admin can say, I set the max size as certain limit. Access service do not set that limit.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys for staying to the questions, and we'll hang out here a little bit. Thank you very much.